This might be a good time to remind folks of what it is Veterans for Peace is and what we do. And the statement of purpose and the mission statement of Veterans for Peace reads as follows. We, having dutifully served our nation, do hereby affirm our greater responsibility to serve the cause of world peace. To this end, we will work with others to increase public awareness of the costs of war, to restrain our government from intervening overtly and covertly in the internal affairs of other nations, to end the arms race and to reduce and eventually eliminate nuclear weapons, to seek justice for veterans and victims of war, and to abolish war as an instrument of national policy. To achieve these goals, members of Veterans for Peace pledge to use nonviolent means and to maintain an organization that is both democratic and open, with the understanding that all members are trusted to act in the best interest of the group for the larger purpose of world peace. And that's the statement of purpose of Veterans for Peace. And we, part of what we do to try to fulfill those purposes is to have this program on once a month on KTOO. And to that end, we are grateful to KTOO for giving us the time, for Jeff Brown for providing the leadership we need and the technical help, and in particular, John and Dolly Kramers, who are consistently here and help to control what leaves the station and enters the airwaves and thence to you. They do a great job, and we're very, very welcome very much their participation. So before we move on, I want to play a song. This was a song by a group, Emma's Revolution, which has performed at least twice in Juneau in the last 3 years. And it's sort of their signature song. And the reason that I'm choosing this song and this group is that they also performed at the Portland Convention and I think set the right mood for the discussion this evening. This is called Peace, Salam, Shalom by Emma's Revolution.
Peace, Salam, Shalom.
Emma's Revolution, as sung at the Veterans for Peace National Convention in Portland a week or so ago. I think it was the 3rd through the 5th. Here to talk about the convention and to share with us his insights is our friend and constantly loyal supporter and member, Rich Moniak. Good evening, Rich.
Hi, Phil.
Okay, what happened at the convention? Fire away.
It was let me correct one thing before I start talking about the convention. We actually had two members from the chapter there. John Simons had just come back from Russia after being in Moscow for 6 years, has a place in Portland, and attended the two days of the session.
Great.
And now he is back in Juneau.
Yeah, I haven't seen him. I'm wishing that he would connect, but and I'll connect with him.
He left a lot of his little miniature peace cranes all over the place down there, which was rather fun to find.
I have a real quick sub-story on this, if you'll indulge me. A year and a half ago, Deborah, my wife and I, and some friends visited with John and Anne in Moscow, where Anne was working for the Anglo-American School as the librarian for both Moscow and St. Petersburg. And anyway, we were then going on from there and taking the Trans-Siberian Express to Beijing, where we spent then some time in China. And when we left, after staying with them, John gave me a little plastic baggie with 50 peace cranes in it, and he asked me to set them up on the length of our trip. And so we set them up in various stations along the Trans-Siberian Railway. We set them up in Beijing. We set them up with the terracotta soldiers. We set them up at the Three Gorge Dam. We had a great time with them and had photographs of them. And last summer made a presentation to John when he and Ann were in town of photographs of his cranes and these various places. Anyway, that was very nice, and we hope it perhaps raised a little bit of awareness. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Back to the convention.
Well, I went to the convention mainly. I think the first attraction to me was Kathy Kelly was going to be there. And she and Ann Wright had both just returned from the flotilla that was attempted to get into Gaza in July. She'd also been in Afghanistan with her group for lengthy periods over the past year and a half with Mike Ferner, who's now the temporary or acting executive director of VFP. They were there for a while. But Kathy is a marvelous speaker and an absolutely inspiring human being. And the chance to see her just down the street in Portland was the primary attraction for me. Ann Wright was also there. They did a talk together about the Gaza flotilla that was a lot more fascinating than what you can read in the news. And there was a lot of other workshops that went on during the entire time. In fact, there's so many workshops, you've been to some of these, they overlap, and you can't get to all the ones you'd like to get to. Kathy did one about Afghanistan that was probably the most informative individual to talk about that after having been there. She talked a lot about this group, this youth group, that Afghan youth peace volunteers that are marching in the streets in Afghanistan with blue bandanas around their neck, that signifies sky blue color that signifies we all live under one sky. And she also spoke at the dinner on Saturday night and had this group on the air over the telephone to talk to us, and they spoke to us for about 5 to 10 minutes. Several different people spoke, so she was a big highlight. I attended a really stunning workshop that I know we'll be talking about PTSD, actually one of the panel sessions as well as an individual talk about post-traumatic stress syndrome and its effect on young soldiers. Ed Tick, who you had on the program here a couple of years ago, was one of the panelists on that. That was a pretty interesting session. Rob Mulford, a veteran from Fairbanks, and the acting director of the Peace Center up there at this time too, he attended the session. He gave a workshop about defense weapons from some Defense Department contractor meetings he had attended in D.C. last October, which was pretty frightening stuff. Rob spent, I think, $4,000 of his own funds to get into these things. and picked up a lot of good information, did a pretty fascinating PowerPoint. Rob and I talked afterwards and about, you know, creating a PTSD workshop or seminar in Alaska, bringing these panelists that we listened to because they were so impressive. So, and that's part of the reason to go, too, is to catch up with people you don't see often. Sure. You make connections over the years, and it's always fun to see faces that are working for something as worthy as this.
With respect to Kathy Kelly's talk on Afghanistan, our organization, has taken formal steps requesting that we disband our effort in Afghanistan and that we bring the boys home. And, you know, to that end, President Obama has recently announced a withdrawal of 10,000 soldiers by the end of the year and all soldiers gone in an orderly fashion by, 2014? And I was wondering if Ms. Kelly had any insights on that or any opinions about it, or is it just more of the same kind of rhetoric coming out of the people that seem to keep us in perpetual war?
Well, it's more of the same. Obviously, 10,000's not much compared to what he's escalated in sending troops there in the past 2.5 years. Kathy talked more about the drone strikes, the airstrikes, and she did tell a story about how the Afghan people tend to sleep out in their courtyard during the summer months because it's too hot inside. And she relayed, you know, a personal story about being welcomed into a family, showing up unexpectedly late at night, lost, and being given a cot to sleep on, being brought out a fan to keep them cool, and then she talked about how the typical night raid often begins with soldiers looking for somebody in a home. She talked about one report where they threw a grenade into the courtyard and killed a girl. And the father, who was part of the Afghan security police, had come running out and was shot to death. It was something that NATO apologized for afterwards, you know, but those are the type of stories and the airstrikes that continually kill innocent people is what she focuses on. I think any level of troop involvement over there she sees as instigating more animosity towards the United States for the very reason of these types of events that happen, and they do happen.
Was there any, did she offer out much hope for improvement in the situation, or was she just saying this is the way it is and you can draw your own conclusions?
Yeah, pretty much. She's advocating just getting out. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And anything short of that's just not going to do it.
Now, let's, for a minute, excuse me, talk about the, before we get into a larger discussion, but real quickly, talk about this PTSD workshop you went to. What was that?
Well, there was a plenary session that Ed Tick and a Jess Goodell and David Phillips is a writer from a small newspaper in Wisconsin. Ed Tick, of course, is a psychologist who's been working with veterans for many, many years. Annually, he takes Vietnam veterans back to Vietnam as part of their healing process. He's written his most notable book is called War in the Soul, and I highly recommend it to anybody that has any curiosity as to somebody who's had, you know, tremendous work with veterans and has tremendous insights into the psychological makeup of what happens. One of the most fascinating things he always talks about is how little post-traumatic stress issues affect the Vietnamese people. And the reasons for that, it's the people deal with it as a community. They deal with their losses as a community, whereas our veterans come home and aren't welcomed back into the community the same way. Even now compared to Vietnam, where we have we attempt to reintegrate them into our culture, it's very superficial. There isn't any recognition of the the harm they've done and felt on our behalf. You know, he's also talked a lot about using Aborigine techniques for healing, which is to absolve the soldiers and take the burden on to ourselves. And you know, as a peace community, you know, that strikes some people the wrong way, that they feel that, you know, we weren't the ones that sent them. But we are the ones that need to make the example and say, we will also absolve them. And they are acting, you know, in a democracy on our behalf, whether we agree or not. So he's got a tremendous amount of insights. He centered the panel. David Phillips, he wrote a book called Lethal Warriors, which began as research for news stories in his local paper about crimes that were being committed from returning soldiers. In fact, I think when he began it, he wasn't aware the soldiers had been returning from Iraq. As he studied it, he found that most of them were coming from the same units. And it did an amazing piece of investigative journalism, which doesn't get done much anymore. Turned it into a book and found that some of the pretty horrendous crimes that were being committed, not only in the public amongst the civilian population, but amongst soldiers on base, killings that made no sense at all. They were all coming from a relatively small group who had come back from Iraq near the same time. So he was speaking about post-traumatic stress from the soldiers he interviewed, from the how they acted out their pain onto the society they came back to. And Jess Goodall she's a very young Marine, enlisted in about 2002, I think. Says she grew up in a very classical, middle-class New York family, joined the Marines to become a diesel mechanic. She wanted to do something unusual. And went to Korea for a year when the war broke out, or actually September 11th happened, I guess. She was in Korea, had to stay there an extra year. When she came back, she wanted to go to Iraq to do her duty there. And the first opportunity that came up was with a mortuary unit, which she knew nothing about, and she volunteered. And what it involved was taking care of the dead soldiers and identifying them and sending them home. And the post-traumatic stress is still with her. I mean, the way she talked, her voice would shatter in certain words. I mean, she really had to do a lot of work to hold herself together, and it was a very, very courageous thing she was doing. I'm sure she's spoken before, but she still hasn't worked many of the bugs out to her story, and it was an incredible thing to witness, both in the panel, and then she talked alone and took questions on her own for 45 minutes in another session later on. I mean, it was frightening stuff that she would talk about, but I guess from her perspective, she sees the absolute horror of war at its end and is responsible for sending the bodies back to families. And, you know, the mortuary unit she described as a very isolated unit that nobody wanted to know because, you know, they didn't want to. They were afraid maybe they would show up there, or they knew these people were seeing things that they couldn't stand seeing.
She has written a book, which we're going to talk about after a quick musical break here. But the book is called Shade It Black, which is a direction that the mortuary workers are given when they are looking at a part of a body that is not recognizable or missing. They have a sort of a profile of a human being, and they just shade in the leg if it's gone, or the arm if it's gone, or part of the head. And it is a very intensely gripping book that explains, I think, in as good a detail as I've ever seen, the experiences that these folks had. And we're going to talk a little bit about that book when we come back, but for now, let's play a song that seems appropriate in this kind of solemn discussion, sung by our friend Buddy. I'm sorry, I can't think of his last name right now.
Bubba Cook.
Yeah, Bubba Cook. And it's called Bring Me Home. Mm-hmm.
I'm a soldier in the army. I'm a good American. I gave my life to God and country. And I'd do it all again. Just a naive boy from Austin. Thought that war was just a game. After my first day out in Baghdad, I could only hang my head in shame. Saw a little girl stranded in the street. A bullet took her down before I could reach my feet. Just bring me home. It's been 12 months since I got here. And I've seen things that no man should. I lost my best friend in Fallujah. And I'd trade places if I could. Left a wife and two young babies. His parents took it really hard. And the country that he fought for just gave him a medal and a car. Never forget the day I saw him leave. Flag draped coffin, no one else was allowed to see. Just bring me home.
Steve Lewis, you know, they had the one day deal. That was Bubba Cook singing his song from the album Wounded Dove, name of the song, Bring Me Home. We're going to keep on our discussion with Rich Moniak right now. I'd like to remind you that you are listening to KTOO FM in Juneau, Alaska, and we are producing a program called Peace Talk, which is part of K2's Monday evening series, Focus on Community. Our guest this evening is Rich Moniak. We've been discussing the VFP, Veterans for Peace, convention that was held in Portland on, I guess, the 3rd through the 6th of August. And in particular, we wanted to talk about a book that was written by one of the panelists that Rich just mentioned on the post-traumatic stress disorder panel that he attended. And Rich, tell us quickly about this book by Jessica Goodell.
Well, she it took a while for her to write it, I guess. And writing it with help was part of her therapy, telling her story. I think post-traumatic stress, one of the main healing methods to it is to be able to share your story. And telling it over and over again is a big part of it, having people to listen and to listen with compassion. As I mentioned earlier, she's still experiencing a lot of the trauma. Her voice visibly or audibly just would break at different points in time. Her posture on the stage would tense, while she was speaking at different points. And she said, what I'd like to do in a bit here is read some of the parts she actually read from the book while she was presenting a talk. And she said that she needed to read as a way to help her calmer, and as well as because it was easier than trying to recall it, because she's still living it. It helped her focus. You know, working, I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like working, and wouldn't have thought about it until I listened to her talk about being on a mortuary unit. You know, we hear about the soldiers that came back from Iraq and the prior administration refused to allow their caskets to be photographed. But I think that's, you know, and you hear body bags, you hear those things. We know that the explosive forces in the improvised explosive devices go through armored vehicles. They've got to be incredibly destructive. But I don't know if we avoid talking about it. She's got a quote in here from some news reporter from one of the major networks that talked, where the woman spoke about feeling responsible that America has not seen the dead bodies, and not just the dead bodies in a casket, but I mean what war looks like. Well, she sees it at the end all the time. And to listen to her speak, and what I'll do, like I said, is read what she wrote to us. And what she's, her chapters in here are all pretty short. This one, it talks about what it's like to be out on a convoy. She begins with explaining why some of the unit goes out on a convoy and why some of them stay back. When we would go on a convoy to pick up some remains, sometimes it was easier than other times, sort of. Sometimes it was a body, and we could put the body in a body bag. Sometimes body parts were severed, but we could still pick them up and put them in a body bag. If it was one person, it would be easy. All the remains were put into one body bag and would all be shipped together. Sometimes there was more than one person, and the cause of death was an explosion. There would be many body parts, and they would be strewn all over, all along the ground, and we would have to pick them up. When we were at these sites, oftentimes the remains were still hot, which meant that the firefight had just finished. Other times we would go in a convoy because they said they had a fallen Marine, and we would have to wait for the firefight to finish before we could even go in to retrieve them. Not all of us went in every convoy. Maybe half of us went. When they came back, the half that didn't go processed the remains. One time, several Marines were killed at once, and we had a slew of body bags flood the bunker. This would happen. There had been 7 Marines killed, and our Marines returned to the bunker with 7 or 8 body bags filled with flesh. We opened the bags and tried to sort out and organize the body parts and bits and pieces into coherent holes. There was a foot still in a boot that still had a dog tag, and that went into one body bag. A leg, with that portion of the trousers intact that carried the Marine's name, was placed in another body bag. Our goal was to separate and classify the remains in a way that resulted in the right body being sent home to the right families. Even though we all knew that, from a Marine's perspective, it didn't matter. If one of my Marines blew up, and I did too, we could be buried together. That's how we Marines are. We labored over this for the family's sake. The Marines who didn't go on the convoy would never know what to expect when a body bag was opened. Anything could be found. One time, Pineda and I pulled back the flap of a bag and found only mounds of shapeless flesh, which we had scooped out with our hands. Everything looked the same. There weren't 4 hands, or a whole leg, or a foot in the bag. It was all vaporized mush. We sorted through it all, doing our best to find anything we could identify that would help us. At times, we found gear in the flesh, Kevlar in an ammo pack, and once a radio. I pulled at a line that came out of the goop, a phone cord with a receiver on it, on the end. I untangled it from the mounds of liquidy flesh, but couldn't remove it. It was stuck. Pineda helped me locate the rest of the phone inside the portion of the torso itself. We found the dog tag here and a blouse name tag there, and color and texture helped us with the sorting by race. Finally, when we were able to arrange it all into 7 portions, 7 Marines, but we could tell we didn't have all the remains, that parts were missing, though we weren't sure what. A couple of Marines went back out to the vehicles to make sure that they had brought in all of the body bags. They found one more and brought it into the bunker. When we pulled back the flap of the last bag, we were looking into the eyes that stared back from several heads, severed heads. The bag contained only heads. We were not expecting that at all. We removed them from the bag and placed each with the rest of the remains. We could tell they were all Marines. Their haircuts were high and tight. By now, it was almost impossible for us to look at the faces. We couldn't look at the faces anymore. The faces were looking back at us.
An excerpt from the book Shaded Black by Jessica Goodell, who was a panelist on a PTSD panel at the recent Veterans for Peace conference down in Portland. And the book goes on to explain her own journey from returning, having incredible difficulty in reconnecting with the American culture and the American way of life, her loyalty and belief in the Marines, and her apparently finding some solace and a way out through education. And she goes on to work toward a master's and wants to be a counselor. She's still a young woman. This book is brand new. And I'm going to huckster it for a minute. It's available for the price of $24.95. It's published. Well, you just look it up on the internet. It's called Shade It Black. I can also say from personal experience that if you have an iBook or some other electronic book, you can find it on, for instance, the iBooks library to download to your Kindle or your iPad or something like that. So it's a highly recommended book. I think I can also say that we were partly because of this experience and partly because of our ongoing interest in the community, I think we Veterans for Peace will be holding a workshop on this or an afternoon session at the Jack or something like that. And we'll try to bring Ms. Goodell up. We'll try to bring Ed Tick up. We'll try to bring in the community people who have worked on this issue in the past, both with JAMI, the Juno Alliance for the Mentally Ill, the National Alliance for Mentally Ill People, the VA people, and so forth, as Mr. Tick so carefully and gracefully articulated when he was on our show last year, the year before, that, and as Rich reiterated, the solution to PTSD is communities coming together and providing protective arms for these returning vets. And, of course, there is PTSD among victims and other sort of non-combatants. I recall last year we had Father Louis Vitale on the program, and he was working out of Nevada and meeting with young people who were using the technology of drones. And they had to be a real pilot that would fly the drones from 7,000 miles away. But the GIs, or the young airmen, who were with them and whose job it was to photograph the post-drone area, went home to their homes in Nevada, to their wives and children and their meatloaf dinner, and they developed PTSD from knowing how devastating the drones attacks were. And I'm making this a monologue here. I didn't intend to do that, but the our concern about this, I think, falls directly into our statement of purpose, which, among other things, is to seek justice for veterans and other victims of war. And I think it's important that as we, theoretically at least, begin to wind down our involvement in Iraq and our involvement in Afghanistan in the next couple of years, that we're going to have more and more of a community price to pay for a long time into the future for the effects of those wars and the sort of relentless, endless bellicosity of the United States. Okay, that said, do we want to talk about this some more, Rich? Or
no,
I didn't mean to sort of start a dialogue.
That's fine. I think The only thing I'd add to what you said about the drones, the drone operators, again, part of the PTSD is not only do they see what they're doing, but they can't tell anybody. They go home and they live with it inside them, and it haunts them. It's like taking a ghost home every night and never letting it go. The post in post-traumatic stress is just that. It haunts you for a long time afterwards.
Okay. We're going to take another quick break and listen to another piece of music, which is Aerosmith featuring Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars with the song Give Peace a Chance. When we get back from that song, we will discuss some of the resolutions that passed at the convention, including one calling for the impeachment of President Obama. So let's hear the music right now. Aerosmith with Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars.
Yeah.
little bit different take on that classic anti-war song, Give Peace a Chance, performed by Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars with Aerosmith. Well, getting back to our discussion here with Rich Moniak. Rich, I know that one of the things that happened at the convention was the passage of a very controversial resolution, and it did pass closely, and it basically calls on the Congress to impeach President Obama for war crimes, and largely depending upon the sort of the unprovoked or theoretically unprovoked attack on Libya and the expansion of the drone war into Pakistan and Yemen and other places and the escalation and now the de-escalation in Afghanistan. So what was that all about? What was the debate?
Well, it's the third year in a row that resolution's come up. It was presented, proposed, written by the one of the chapters in Florida. The first 2 years it didn't pass. It didn't come close to passing in 2009. Last year, I believe it was closer. This year, it was about 55% voted for it. It definitely generated the most, longest debate during the entire business meeting on Saturday. It didn't call for the impeachments as much as it called for Congress to start impeachment proceedings,
right,
which is still, personally, I think, a leap ahead of where they should be doing anything. But the basis of it was, VFP supported impeachment of George Bush, and a lot of the things that have gone on with this administration are in the same, they're following President Bush's footsteps. He's expanded the war in Afghanistan, as we've been talking. He's intensified the drone strikes into Pakistan. Incredible. I mean, the amount of drone strikes more that he's launched and allowed to be launched, and the CIA running their own strikes into Pakistan is far, far more than President Bush ever did. There's the Libya issue, which, it violates the War Powers Act, and he did not seek and still hasn't sought permission from Congress to go over. The Congress, of course, I think it was last month, voted against something, but they continue to fund it. I don't remember the details of it, but they're afraid to say no because they're afraid to be criticized for not supporting the troops anywhere. But Congress isn't happy with Obama not coming to them for permission to be engaged in bombing in Libya. The debate, people felt on the other side that it would alienate VFP from a lot of the alliances it's built over the years, in particular in more of the poverty-stricken communities that are heavily behind Obama. It would really blow credibility to the group. Some people felt that, you impeach Obama, it would have been like impeaching Bush and being stuck with Cheney. The system's not going to change. In fact, in that case, the system would have gotten worse. But it's an empty gesture. But that argument would have been the same if it should have been the same 5-6 years ago in impeaching Bush. We should have been saying we're after something bigger. And personally, I think the argument about impeachment begins with asking Congress to investigate President Obama's role in the wars and whether he has broken any laws, violated his oath, and so forth. It begins with an investigation with a committee, then goes to the full House for a vote, which becomes an indictment, and then goes to the Senate for a hearing.
Right, and so a call to impeach the president is really so nonspecific as to be almost meaningless. I mean, say begin impeachment proceedings or consider impeaching or something, but...
Well, and it would also be far more educational. I think you could, with an investigation, you would get into far more than the political rhetoric that's going to surface when both sides stand up for what they think, where they need to be. An investigation is going to get deep. It's going to be a long-running story. You're going to get behind a lot more of what's going on. It will also be a fantastic opportunity to educate the public as to how our government's supposed to function. What is really the checks and balances if Congress doesn't have the ability to check the president in any way without a up or down vote on impeachment? there's a process that it should be going through, and people need to hear that. I think the, you know, I don't know if people are, if parties and people are afraid after what Clinton went through that, well, if we, you know, if we impeached Bush, if the Democrats in 2006 didn't take it off the table, well, then the next president, the Republicans, would come back. It becomes a partisan issue. But if you remember what Howard Baker said during the Senate hearings in during Nixon's impeachment investigation, or the Watergate hearings, I guess they weren't really impeachment hearings, but Howard Baker was a Republican who was dead set against impeaching until the evidence came out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's education, not just for the public, it's education for the entire country, including our members of Congress.
Right, and in the Watergate thing, they found specific evidence of wrongdoing and were proceeding when the president resigned. So, yeah, well, part of me thinks that this is a huge tempest in a teapot, because although there are some people who feel that it's the appropriate thing to do is to pass a resolution like this, I mean, I remember fairly well when a similar resolution was passed regarding George W. Bush. I mean, it was totally ignored. Nobody paid any attention at all, and I doubt that there'll be much damage caused by this, or certainly not much good done by it either.
Well, when the resolution passed about Bush, I think VFP joined a loud chorus.
Mm-hmm.
VFP was not alone. VFP's pretty much alone with this.
Yeah.
But you know, when you listen to the different, I mean, I can see both positions. You know, one, taking it against Bush, we've felt this in our own community, not speaking out against the war's escalations with Obama in office, the criticism that we were partisan against Bush, mm-hmm. and that's all we were interested in, was making war a partisan issue. We're not. And to be consistent, again, I think the right thing to have done 3 years ago was to, 4 years ago, was to call for an investigation,
mm-hmm.
recognize it's an investigation's necessary.
And it would have indeed have been educational, but I think that both the president and you know, the leaders in Congress are very concerned that that type of investigation even will lead to some type of partisan witch hunt.
Well,
and if you look at the behavior of some of our national leaders, that's an easy thing to think might happen.
Well, and it certainly happened 10 years ago or 12 mm-hmm. years ago with Clinton in office. It was a witch hunt. I mean, it
sure.
was, you know, it'd be interesting to see what the Republicans would do with Obama in this situation, as now that they've got control of Congress, they could actually do this investigation.
Sure.
But they're also banking on the presidency in 2 years. And, you know, it's going to be impeachment every 2 years. By the mm-hmm. opposition party. I mean, nobody's interested in that. You know, I don't think the country has. I don't think it's the solution, because it doesn't really get down to what the heart of the problem is, which is, you know, we've got a military-industrial complex running the country.
Yeah, I mean, that's the basic underlying issue is militarism, and I don't know how we're going to ferret that out through a bunch of political antics, either at the VFP National Convention, or and in the nation's capital. What other resolutions were considered and passed?
There was three resolutions were presented about the conflict between the Israelis and Palestinians. Mm-hmm. There had been a resolution already on the books that VFP had passed supporting the peace initiatives there.
Mm-hmm.
There was one call for a one-state solution that I think a Northwest chapter put together, recognizing some polling that was done in the Palestinian territories that supports a one-state solution. You know, ultimately, a one-state solution is probably the most workable long-term solution if you could actually create a democracy with it, a secular democracy. The Jewish state would be gone, without a doubt. There wasn't a lot of support for that. In fact, nobody got up to speak to it during the debate. There was a debate, there was a resolution proposed that more or less called for the two-state solution, the peace process to continue, the roadmap, recognizing that the borders need to be altered to reflect the reality on the ground, recognizing different things with water rights that would have to be shared. It attempted to be more, I would call it more pragmatic and less pro-Palestinian. outwardly pro-Palestinian. I think it still spoke to a lot of international law issues that you know would support the Palestinian situation. The one that passed overwhelmingly was put together by a working group that fractured into two pieces because of the this other resolution, the one that wanted to focus on the roadmap. They basically said, you know, the United States needs to get out. Stop trying to be a broker of this peace. We're not an honest broker. We need to respect Palestinian right to self-determination more. Let them. They said we need to respect the elections of 2006, the democratic elections that were monitored, which put Hamas into power. They would have been the majority party in Palestine, and that fell apart with a little bit of help from the U.S. Mm-hmm. That's the one that passed. That resolution passed.
Well, let's hope that that'll also have a bit of a positive impact. It's kind of hard to say, you know, the Palestinians are going to the UN here next month, I believe, and they're going to ask for UN recognition of a Palestinian state. And at this point, the U.S. is committed to vetoing such a resolution. And, you know, there are smart people who think, you know, maybe this is a chance we've been looking for. Maybe we ought to say, okay, if we're really serious about this path to peace, maybe we ought to support that. And, you know, and then tell the parties to sit down and work it out. It's sort of a little bit backwards, but it would certainly lessen conflict, I would think. Well, one other thing I wanted to talk about before we close, and this is off the subject of the convention, except I do want to ask you, where is next year's convention?
Florida, I believe.
Oh, Florida. Okay. Well, we'll have to go there live. Yeah, you up for that, John and Dolly? last time we talked a little bit about the YES program and the young people who are going to be coming to Juneau, and how is that working out now?
Well, we've got four students coming to Juneau. There's also three going to Sitka, one going to Haines, but with our program, there will be four in Juneau. Two have arrived already, mm-hmm. a young girl from the West Bank and a young boy from Egypt. Another boy from Kuwait is coming next week, and there will be a girl from Turkey who we're not sure what her arrival date is yet. Mm-hmm.
So are you going to have some type of community reception or anything like that for these guys?
We're going to let them get settled
first. Let them get settled in.
Yeah. There's going to be an International Education Week thing, I think that's what it's called, in November that they'll be preparing for. They'll be mm-hmm. presenting things about their country then, we hope. That's part of their work while they're here mm-hmm. is to present their country to the public. They'll be hopefully getting involved in some community activities as well, some things to support the community. One other note I thought I'd mention, too, before the next show you've got related to the Palestinians, which we were just talking about, that resolution. There'll be an activist who I went to Gaza with 2 years ago who will be in Juneau the week after Labor Day. She's producing a documentary film called Palestinian Gandhis. Something to that effect about the different peacemakers in Palestine, both West Bank and Gaza. She's going back to Gaza. She's been there three times, and she's going back shortly after she visits the Northwest, including Juneau.
And her...
Her name is Pam Bailey.
And it's a documentary that's being made? Or?
It's a mm-hmm. brief documentary. She raised $18,000 to put it together. She's doing it with a co-activist that's been to Gaza with her.
And then distribution or something like that would be...
I don't know all the details of it. I know I've got a copy coming when it comes out, and we'll be trying to do something possibly with that before she arrives, or some of her documentary work. She's also written, she's had pieces published in The Nation magazine, I believe, in Common Dreams, some of the Middle East news sites. Hopefully people will come out and hear that, especially, you know, considering the UN vote coming up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's bringing us pretty much to the end of our program here. I'm trying to think of upcoming events other than that. The VFP local chapter meets at 8:15 on Saturday morning. Let's see, which Saturday? Got it right here, and I can't pull it up. So Here we go. Saturday, the... I guess I don't have it. Anyway.
It's this coming week, I think.
I think it's this coming Saturday morning. You know, consult the... give us a call, 586-1175. Or we don't have a website anymore. We need to work on that. By the way, we're looking for a volunteer website keeper of the flame. And I think Juno People for Peace and Justice is meeting soon, or?
We'll be meeting Thursday night. Yeah,
Thursday
we'll be
night.
Talking about, again, the exchange students, as well as JPPJ is working on a nuclear activity about nuclear weapons towards the end of September.
Okay, great. And I'm thinking that maybe at that next meeting, VFP will talk about whether we want to put together a questionnaire for our assembly candidates, now that we know who they are. And I guess there's only one candidate for the school board for two seats, so there's no sense giving Sally a questionnaire. But anyway, I think that wraps us up. Our guest this evening was Rich Moniak. He did a great job explaining some of the events and the activities surrounding the VFP National Convention. We were ably assisted by John and Dolly Kramers. We're very lucky that they are as committed as they are. And this is Phil Smith saying goodbye. Have a nice evening, and remember to wage peace.
The end of war.